Well, I always jump at a chance to get to interview David Reagan because he's been a friend of mine and Captain Herb's and all of WSB's for many years, as from his days in Legends cars before I ever knew of him to driving in the ARCA series and truck series. And of course, now he is a vested Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series veteran. So, David, how we doing, man? And how are things shaping up so far for the early part of your trip in Daytona there?
Yeah, we've had a great start to the year and a good start to Daytona here in July. You know, we've had a few bad races here and there where we broke a component. You know, we got wrecked at Michigan, a few odd and end things here and there. But for the most part, our Front Row Motorsports team has had some speed. We've been able to make second round of qualifying pretty regular. We've been able to run in the top 20 when we have a good day. And so those were realistic goals that we set out to start the season, and I know that doesn't sound like goals that Jimmy Johnson or Kevin Harvick may have, but for Front Row Motorsports, it's still a growing team. To achieve some of those goals have been good, but yeah, this starts the second half of the season. We need a good Daytona, and then we get right into the meat of our schedule, driving into the playoffs. So yeah, we've got a lot of good things coming down the pipe, but we're pretty pleased with our speed and what we've been able to accomplish so far.
And there's certainly a lot to be pleased with, and I was looking at your stats for this year, and it's so hard now with stats because the point system has changed to really pay attention to points, and of course points get messed up if you have a bad stage or you have a few bad results. But I like average finish. To me, that no matter what the points are, your finish can show your performance a lot of times. And your average finish this year is actually better than it has been in a long time. And when you and I talked at Atlanta, I had just become aware of some of the performance changes behind the scenes. But that was before race number two. And here we are coming up on race number 18, so halfway through the 2018 campaign. What has changed even in the shop since you really your team really started putting these changes into motion? Do you have some new race cars? Is there a little more momentum? I mean, it seems like you and Michael are both running pretty well.
Yeah, we do have some new race cars, and it takes 4 or 5 weeks sometimes to implement changes that we find in the wind tunnel. On the seven post rig, our engineers work through some new front end suspension parts. It takes several weeks to get those parts built and approved and tested on the track before we really implement them. So that's one thing with a smaller team. It is a little bit of a slower process, but yeah, our guys have been working really hard to try to make sure our bodies have as much downforce as we can that still passes the scanning station that NASCAR has every weekend. We're consistently working on new suspension parts and pieces to try to get our tires to be more effective and have more grip. And the guys at the engine shop are always working on some new things to improve our horsepower and take some weight out of the engine. So, a list of those things. Every 2 or 3 weeks, we roll out some new upgrades on our race cars. So I feel like we still have a few more things that we're going to roll out over the summer, but I know other teams do as well. So that's why we've got to stay focused and execute well. We can't make mistakes. I can't speed on pit road. And if we can do all of those things, I think running in the top 15, running in the top 20 can be more of a realistic goal for us.
And one place I think that would be a low goal for you, here we go, what a transition, is Daytona International Speedway. And, of course, that race is going to be the Coke Zero 400, or it's the Coke Zero No Sugar 400, right? I think they got a little extra name in there. But that's going
right.
Yeah, I mean, that's why not? Let's make the name longer. But it's going to be Saturday night on NBC. It's going to be on the big stick this time, not on NBCSN. And, David, your first career win, 2011 Daytona. I remember I was at Mark Arum on WSB.
That's right.
I was at his wedding, so I wasn't getting to watch the race, and I was disappointed about not watching the race. And I remember a DJ at B98.5 FM, Kelly McCoy, who retired a year or two after that, came up to me and he said, "David won." And at the same time, my late father at the time texted me and said, "David won." And I was on the dance floor. And, I mean, I'm not a great dancer, David, but I created some moves when I learned that our boy, David, had finally crossed the threshold. And so this race, I know, has to be special to you. So can you just kind of relive that 2011 moment and just what it felt like to shed that or break that seal, I guess, and
yeah,
as far as the Cup
was
Series?
A a big win for obviously me and my career. I'd won a couple of Xfinity races, but haven't been able to win in the Cup Series, and that was the first win for UPS since Dale Jarrett had retired several years ago. And then, you know, for me personally, just to win in the Cup Series is such a huge accomplishment. It was a dream come true to just make my first NASCAR start in the Cup Series several years prior to that, but to finally get in victory lane and know that you've been able to beat everybody else. I think I had 1 or 2 seconds at the time and a couple of, you know, thirds and fourths, but you never forget your first win. And then to happen here at Daytona. Daytona is such a special place for everybody in motorsports, whether you're in sports cars or motorcycles or certainly stock cars. Daytona is a special place, so it was a big win for me. And then last year in the Coke Zero 400, we had a chance to win, led some late in the race, ended up finishing sixth. So yeah, I feel like we do have some momentum coming to Daytona, and hopefully I can make the right moves and have a little bit of luck and have something to race them at the end.
So I want to tell you about that race. Okay, I was actually, this, I know this sounds like a bummer, I was with my grandfather, was in hospice then, and that was the night I spent the night with him there. And so I was trying to watch the race and still keep respect for the environment, and certainly seeing you up front with, what was it, you know, 10 or 5 laps to go, I'm going, you got to be kidding me. Like, of course the two nights David's going to win at Daytona are going to be when I'm at a wedding and almost at a funeral. Okay, so you're picking good times for these, bud. But that was certainly an interesting moment for sure. But so you kind of you saved us a question there, because I did want to ask about running there last year, but now I wanted to zoom out a little further. It seems like restrictor plate racing, just in your time in the sport, you know, 10-12 years, has evolved, and we've gone from the traditional pack racing to tandem racing to back to the pack, and now it seems like it's been maybe a little more tame just in the 2018 season, where the cars are really low to the ground. Which type of plate racing that you've seen in your career is maybe the one that you could thrive the best at?
You know, the tandem racing was a little different. It was weird. It was unique at the time, but I think it provided some of the best action and most dramatic finishes that we've seen. And I still don't think that's what we need in the Cup Series, because it's just a little awkward to think that you've got to be tandem with someone else to make your car go faster. And I think the purity of motorsports isn't really the same when you're looking for a partner, and it's almost like you got to find a dancing partner to go fast. So that was a weird part of the cycle, but it was a lot of fun, and I think it was very dramatic for the fans to watch. And I think at speedway racing, it's going to continually evolve over the years, because the engines evolve, the bodies evolve, we get smarter as a driver and as an industry. We learn how to communicate with our spotters better, and so everything just continues to change some. And I know NASCAR reacts to different restrictor plate size, different, you know, body styles or spoiler sizes to try to keep the cars around that 200 miles an hour range. But I think it's unique, and I embrace that. I love coming to Daytona and Talladega. It's a little different feel than any racetrack that we run on, but the same goes for Martinsville and Bristol and Richmond, some of the short track. It's a little different feel than going to Atlanta Motor Speedway or Charlotte Motor Speedway. So I think that's what makes a NASCAR sport so fun and unique, is we've got a very diverse schedule that you get to see a lot of different types of racing throughout the year.
Well, certainly the case. And so, David, you're with a smaller team there, and one of the things I want to find out, we have this debate. One of the places this audio is going to play is on our Five to Go podcast with Eric Von Hessler and Dan Elliott. And we've talked about the rule book and creating more rules to try to create parity, but is that really the case? And with a small team like yours, do you want to see more rules to keep the big teams from spending, you know, $10 million to get 1/10 of a second? Or do you want to see the rule book open up, because maybe there's something where you and your team can find, there are more places to find gray areas to hit upon to catch the big teams? Is there one that's better than the other?
You know, that's a hard question to answer, and I think there's a lot of good opinions on both sides. I do think that we all can agree that we've got to keep costs controlled somehow, because the sport does continue to get bigger and bigger from a cost standpoint, and the race teams, they're going to spend what they have to spend in order to win, and that does put a very hard challenge on newer teams coming into the sport, like Bob Jenkins and Front Row Motorsports. He's been in the sport for about, you know, 7 or 8 years now, but he's had to spend millions and millions of dollars each year to continue to develop and keep up, and it's hard to catch up with Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs Racing and Penske and RCR, because they've got such a deep foundation and roots that go back 25, 30 plus years. So what we do need to keep things to where we can attract new potential car owners, because car owners don't live forever and race teams don't survive forever. So you got to have a practical model to where new people can come into the sport and think that they can be successful for within a couple of years. If you tell someone that it's going to be 10 or 15 years before you can be successful, they generally will go and do something else, because they don't want to go through with that misery and spend that much money to wait that long. So I think that the business model can be tweaked a little bit. It is very expensive, but it's also hard to hold teams back. If they want to spend money in certain areas, it's hard to regulate that. So I don't know what the answer is, but I do think it's a topic worthy of discussion that we've got to continue to look at to make sure our sport stays healthy for years to come.
That may be one of the most well-rounded answers you could hear on that. And David, when's the next time we could see you in more of your television or radio analyst role? Because that's something you really blossomed into the last couple of years.
Yeah, I do a couple of shows for NASCAR Race Hub on Fox Sports 1 about every month, two or three a month. I have a lot of fun doing that. It's a great outlook at the sport from a different point of view. I'm always driving on Sundays, so it's nice to get back and, you know, see some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. So, yeah, you can check out. I think I'm off next week, but in 2 weeks I'll be back on for a Race Hub, and it's on Fox Sports 1 every weeknight at 6 p.m. Eastern. So that's a lot of fun, and I keep running around with my family and the NASCAR world, so it keeps me busy.
It seems like it is, and riding a motorcycle too, something I didn't realize that you were in, that Kyle Petty charity ride. Is that motorcycle riding something new for you?
Yeah, that is something new for me. I'm not a big motorcycle person, but I did buy a Harley, and the Kyle Petty charity ride is a great event that raises a lot of money and awareness for the Victory Junction Gang Camp, and I know a lot of you guys know with my involvement with the Shriners Hospitals for Children, and that's a real neat tie-in. There's a few Shriners patients that get to go to that camp, so thought that was a great way to help raise some awareness for the hospitals as well, and have some fun. So yeah, that's been a good time, but I do prefer my four wheels and being buckled in.
Ain't that the truth? Hey, was Jacqueline on the same bike as you, or did she get her own?
Yeah, she was. She was on the same bike as me. So we got a big touring bike, so she felt safe. And we had a good time. We had a great time.
Well, certainly. I know you got other availabilities to get to here, but watch for that Shriners Children's Hospital Ford, car number 38. It'll be there at Daytona. And that 38, it's a full-time race car, guys. We have to grasp to the ones of those that remain full-time. And so we're glad to see David out there campaigning and representing the Georgia gang. Thanks for spending some time, buddy.
Yeah, we appreciate you guys and appreciate everybody down in Georgia pulling and supporting the Front Row team. It's always great to see.